Do you believe at this point, Paul, that you guys were successful in finding things, anything?
Yes, as a matter of fact, the CIA ultimately, after a great deal of delay and aggravation, ultimately released 90,000 pages of Stargate archives. And in those archives, I have found a good deal of information, you know, the original raw data, mm-hmm. some of the feedback, some of the analysis, all put together, and you can see where, in a number of cases, we were very successful. Now, when they released the archives, they very conveniently stripped off the operational data, the material that actually told you what the targets were. They conveniently removed a good share of the best, the feedback and the best results, the best evaluations we got. In fact, there'll be, it was really kind of amusing to see this, there'd be this evaluation from one of our customers saying, this project was very successful, the remote viewers produced blank. There's this big black square on there, and there's no way to tell why it was successful. You know, so it was interesting.
Did it get frustrating?
Oh, absolutely. It was frustrating, you know, of course, from this vantage point, looking at that and seeing yet again, just evading capture, the smoking gun that we were looking for to show that we really were successful. We knew we were successful. We did get feedback at the time on a number of projects that we knew we were successful on, and hoped that the raw data would then, the actual documentary evidence would be available. And yet here, right in some of the most crucial areas, it was redacted. It was blanked out, and you know, tantalizing and yet incomplete. So
how often, Paul, would you guys remote view? Every day?
Usually
for 7 years, in your case?
Yes, you usually worked every day, but you wouldn't necessarily work an operation every day. Interestingly, one of the documents I found in the archives was a guide to how much you should work a viewer, and it said, you know, for surge efforts where you really had crucial intelligence development, it was time sensitive and all that, you could work a viewer up to 2 to 3 times a day, but it was not recommended to work a viewer on a, you know, high-intensity kinds of operations for long periods of time, and the recommended amount was an operational session every other day. But on the days when we're working operations, we may do training targets of some sort or some research kind of a target.
Did RV see things in real time, or do you also see things in the future?
Well, I like to say there is no such thing as real time. The present doesn't exist. All you have is the past, the very recent past, and the future. Because, in fact, humans have this consciousness window. They have, I don't know, it's roughly a tenth of a second, that it takes our senses to recognize things that have happened and pass that information in to be processed in the perceptual process. And consequently, for example, you asked that question to me, that seemed immediate. It was really, there was a slight time delay, kind of like radio has, you know, to avoid me saying some four-letter word you don't want to hear, right?
Right.
So
not that you would.
Not that I would, absolutely. But what it amounts to is that humans don't perceive time in the immediate present tense the way we presume we do. We have the illusion of that, but it really isn't the case. So we either live in the past, we actually live slightly in the past in a very interesting way. So that totally had nothing to do with anything, really, in answer to your question. I'll tell you right now, most remote viewings we did had to do with the very recent past or the true past. A few were done towards the future, and even fewer of those were successful. I had one particular experience, which I've related before, and maybe at some point, if you want me to do it again, I will, where I actually described in very excruciating detail an event that didn't happen for another 50 hours.
Go ahead. Tell us it.
Okay. Well, what happened was I was asked to go over to the operations building where we did all our viewing, and do an operation. Now, I had no idea what sort of an operation it was. It turned out it's what we call a directed search, which is essentially go out and look around and see what the heck's going on and let us know. It's sort of a a walk through the neighborhood to see if there's something we need to be aware of, right? The tasking, the words in the tasking were something to this effect: describe the most important event for us to know about in the next few days. Now, of course, the viewer doesn't get that tasking. The viewer gets an arbitrary number that has been assigned to stand for that tasking. And I got the number, and I started describing this structure. I perceived a metallic structure, and it was in the middle of the water, and it was at night. And then I all of a sudden realized it was moving, and I was getting input of radars and weaponry and anti-submarine warfare. And I came to an analytic conclusion that this is a warship, and I had sort of an impression it was a U.S. warship. And I described that a bit, and then I had this further impression of an aircraft off in the distance orbiting around, which ultimately dropped a one or two cylindrical, long, thin cylindrical objects with little stubby wings that made guttering sounds and flew around in a kind of random pattern. Then it developed that, these are all my perceptions now, the flying tubes come together with the vessel, and there is smoke and consternation, and the superstructure of the vessel cants over, and I had an impression of fire hoses on the deck, and all this is going on, and my monitor said, okay, well, where is this aircraft being directed from? And I, somewhere far inland, I perceived that this was in a enclosed body of water bounded by sandy areas, and this third world country, flat roof buildings, even some domestic animals in the street, it seemed like, was where the control was coming from. And, you know, there was more involved here, and eventually the monitor says, well, you're off. He had expected me to develop some other kind of information.
Right.
He said, you're off. Nobody can be on all the time. This, by the way, was Ed Daniels. I guess I might as well say that. He said, you're off. No one can be right all the time. Let's go home. It was the weekend, you know. So I threw the session in the safe, and we went home. Well, Monday morning, Skip Atwater calls me and says, Paul, where's that session that you did on Friday? I said, what's in my safe? Why do you care? I didn't say quite that rudely. I didn't mean it to be rude. I said, it's in my safe, but so what? I was off. And he says, you haven't read the papers this morning, have you? I said, what? And I opened up the paper, and a U.S. frigate had been hit by, it turned out, two Exocet missiles fired by an Iraqi jet.
Oh, my. I remember that story.
Yeah, yep. The USS Stark. And sometime later, I got the after-action report, the official Navy after-action report in a class I was taking on indications in warfare intelligence, or I'm sorry, indications in warning intelligence. And in the after-action report, I was able to trace my session in terms of the details I provided with that after-action report, and it was amazingly accurate.